Down to Business with Bobby Kerr.
Brought to you by Bank of Ireland
on News Talk.
Now, I told you about our esteemed business panel. They're with us here this morning in the shape of Robert Whelan of Rockwell Finance and Valerie Cox, who's a journalist and author. You're both very welcome. Firstly, I'd just like to apologise for the big frog that arrived in my throat this morning. I've got a big cup of honey here beside me. But I woke up this morning and said, wow, this is weird. So my newspaper guests are going to do all the talking and I'm going to sit here and drink my honey. Valerie Cox, we'll start with you. Front page of the Irish Examiner, no foul play in airport blaze. I think there might have been a sense, because everybody was so shocked about what happened in Heathrow Airport, that there could have been something untoward. Apparently there's not, which is good news.
No, it is good news that it wasn't anything untoward. But at the same time, I mean, one little incident like this, or one major incident, wiped out an airport for an entire day and discommoded thousands of people, thousands of flights. And there's a very interesting piece, I think, in the Examiner, where they're talking about how much we are dependent on Heathrow, which is quite extraordinary. If you think about it, the 5,500 passengers who were due to fly out of Dublin were going on to connecting flights from Heathrow. They weren't just trying to get to Heathrow.
Yeah.
And that gives us a tiny indication of how bad things are. Now, he goes on to say, of course, we saw the other problem with the collapse of Holyhead there a few months ago as well. But it's very interesting because he says the infrastructure is so bad. And he's not just talking about Heathrow, this is Corrie. He's talking about other European hubs as well. For example, Frankfurt and so on. You know, none of them are up to date. And the future of airports is going to be in Asia. Apparently, China are building something like 240 airports in the next 20 years.
Yeah.
And it's going to go completely away from the airports we know now, which is quite extraordinary, really.
No, it's a really good piece by Owen Corrie. Robert,
yes.
He talks about Doha Airport, which I was in last year, and it's like something, you know, from another world.
Yeah.
And it's designed in a way to cope with like millions of passengers, and as Valerie says there, the infrastructure at Heathrow, at Schiphol, even though there's been a lot of investment there, it still almost feels that they're improving on something, rather than creating something that's necessary.
Yeah, this is a great story about preparedness and vulnerability.
Yeah.
And from Heathrow's perspective, so their CEO, Thomas Woldby, described the incident as big as it gets for our airport. And to be fair, so what they're saying is that the power grid wiped out effectively enough power to power a small city. And I get that. And he's saying you can't have generators for everything. But at the same time, if you trumpet yourself as the world's favourite airport and the biggest airport in the world, you do need to provide for these things. It is chronically under-resourced and it's famously under-resourced. And they said Owen Corrie has done a phenomenal job of highlighting just exactly how far behind Europe, not just Heathrow, are being left as these hubs, and particularly the Middle East, as they're trying to pivot from oil as a source of revenue to try and promote tourism and these hubs.
Yeah,
they're investing huge amounts. Abu Dhabi's fine. I've been in Abu Dhabi. That was a terrible experience. So it's finally getting an upgrade. He said Abu Dhabi Airport. So that'd be nice.
All right. Valerie, the front page of the Irish Times tells us the US warns of action on Irish tax scam. And this relates to the US Secretary of Commerce, Howard Lutnick. He really isn't our friend, is he?
No, he's not our friend. And he's exaggerating the figures for his own use anyway. I mean, I think to really look at this story, we have to go back about 40 years when the IDA started taking a very serious interest in importing American firms, if you like. But what, you know, they had a lot of people who went around the country, sought out sites, a lot of them in very rural areas, for example, outside Sligo and so on, and sold these sites to American business people who weren't coming here for the good of their health. They were coming here to make money. And also at that stage, we were taking a serious interest in developing careers of Irish people, expert workers who could take over these sites. And, you know, for that reason, you actually can't call it a tax scam, not unless you're American and you are Mr. Lutnick. He actually said that Ireland had 55.4 billion surplus last
year. He later increased it to 75 billion.
He went up again on it.
Yeah,
and he was including all sorts of things like the Apple payment and all the rest of it. And he went on Fox News as well, saying that Ireland was a tax scam. I mean, I think this is where it came from as well. But I think it's, you know, it was a very logical thing for Ireland to do. It wasn't a tax scam. We were looking after ourselves. And now Trump is going to try and look after his own patch by bringing in these tariffs. And Simon Harris now, for example, he's very, very worried about this because he says it looks like the tariffs are going to come in before the talks. And what he actually said was he seems determined on April 2nd to announce a series of tariff measures. This is on the EU, of course, not just us. But he said, the point is we've got to control what we can control and we've got to influence what we can influence. And I thought that was very like the prayer for serenity. God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Yeah, absolutely. Well said, Valerie. Robert, what's your take, less poetic take on it?
Yeah, I suppose. Well, I've kind of called this Brexit too, which I feel, so I kind of just saying, like, so 6 years ago, 7 years ago, Irish business was told pivot, pivot. So we successfully pivoted and had a dynamite result from that, thankfully. But now we're being told to pivot again. I think the big thing here is what Simon Harris is warning us is this time they're serious.
Yeah,
I think that's his message and we just need to prepare for it. Lutnick himself is an abominable man, and I say that. But his fascination with Ireland as a tax scam, he was CEO of Cantor Fitzgerald, who would have traded and profited from shares in the said companies that he's now railing against.
Absolutely.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, well, we'll keep an eye on this space. Some interesting going-ons, Valerie, at the Web Summit. Web Summit co-founder was lining his pockets and chasing windfall courtiers. Paddy Cosgrave claims conference partners cheated him and his firm. Like, it's, we're not going to get into the nitty-gritty on this, but, you know, when you look at something, a public fallout like this for a very profitable company, and you look at, you know, personalities that have clearly fallen out and the damage that they're doing to themselves and to their business.
It's crazy.
It's mind-boggling.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about a very successful business. And when you look at this, when people fall out, the damage that can actually be done. And, you know, if we look at other very successful firms where there's been co-founders or family or whatever, and how successful they can be when they pull together. And then you see something like this and the whole business becomes damaged as a result.
Yeah.
I think it's a very timely warning for other people as well.
Yeah,
I think it's an apocryphal tale about having a strong shareholders agreement. And I think anyone listening this morning who's in business, certainly in my experience, that is where the rows always happen. It's when you have multiple partners in a business. And so from this side of it, I think some of the comments made by, you looked at the testimony from the barrister, he's saying about that the shares were not bought by the two individuals.
Yeah, and that there's some dispute over whether it's a quasi-partnership
exactly.
or not.
And we let
so is it even a partnership?
Exactly. So let the courts kind of decide that. But ultimately, I would say that if you own 100% shares in the business and you decide to sell 7% of them or 13% of them, if you decide not to charge for them, well, that, unfortunately, you could have charged for them then. So
yeah.
I think, yeah.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. But it's a very, very interesting. And I think we'll be reading more about it.
Absolutely.
And there'll be plenty of theatrics, etc. Now, Valerie, Michael O'Leary, he's been 30 years plus in Ryanair. He's 65 this year. One of his interesting bonus targets almost came to fruition. This is that if shares in Ryanair have moved above 21 euros on 11 days in the past month, a level F, if sustained for 28 days, would unlock 100 million pay deal for him.
Yeah, I mean, it's quite an extraordinary thing, but you've got to look at it as being a bit of a gamble. I mean, if I said to you, your listenership is going to be up by whatever over so many days, you'll get a bonus of, well, Maybe not quite that amount. But
listen to me this morning, I certainly won't.
But it is a hell of a gamble. It really is. And his problem is, of course, that he's got to keep it going for 28 consecutive days. Now, so far, they've only managed to maintain 3 days. That was last Tuesday to Thursday. And they closed at or above the key threshold that would trigger all these stock options, leading to this large bonus. The stock, in fairness, there is a little bit of a change here. It's been helped recently by a board decision to remove restrictions on non-EU nationals buying the group's ordinary shares. Yeah. So, I mean, that could make a difference here.
Will it probably mean that there'll be more stock traded?
More investment. I think ultimately, this is quite common, obviously, in CEO pay, because obviously CEOs, one of their main responsibilities is to drive shareholder value. So if they can be compensated for doing that, I think what this story really highlights is the volatility in the airline market and the airline sector in general, the challenges faced in the US and the profitability of Ryanair being threatened, but obviously being well managed. And to be fair to Michael O'Leary, what you can say is that he doesn't waste a crisis, because in his latest statement, he's saying we're going to be first into Ukraine and we get 5 million passengers out of that. But the JP Morgan have put a target of $26 on this share, or 26 euros on this share, which means Michael at some stage will get his payday.
But it's also, if you think about, 100 million is small beer given the value to the business.
Absolutely. The growth in this business. Yeah. And another side of it is that last year they paid their first dividend. And that's the sign that Ryanair has gone from being the young upstart kind of whippersnapper at the heels of the market to now being what's basically known in the market as not a growth share, but effectively an income generating share, a more stable player.
Yeah, very interesting. Shares in plunging British pub chain Wetherspoon, Valerie.
Yeah, now this is the chain. They've got 6 outlets in the Republic and 3 in Northern Ireland. And they're in trouble because their shares fell as much as 10% in London. And this is the lowest level they've had in 2 years. So it's very, very serious for them. The Goodbody analyst, Fintan Ryan, said they've highlighted that they have the most earning sensitivity to the up and downside from revenue and cost variables. So, you know, it ended yesterday just a little bit under 10%. It was a very, very rough day for them. Investors are getting worried about it. And he said, even if the wages remain in line with what the market expects, changes in government policy, such as national insurance or corporation tax, can have a huge impact on what is already a low margin business. Yeah. The trend is not good.
We see this right across hospitality, Robert.
Yes.
Where there are, you know, where there are good incentives to pay people more, but the business is not able to sustain the wage rate.
Yeah, and this is ultimately as well, just Gen Z don't drink. And the next generation of consumers are not going to pubs and bars the same way we did. And overall, the shares are down a third since February last year, which is very frightening.
Yeah.
Not good. I think it's also a reflection of the weakening UK economy just in general. And just as an anecdote, like there was a Wetherspoons in my hometown of Carlow and that closed last year. So
there was also, again, the margins that this business operate on, it's a low price seller. So it's the cheapest place to get a drink.
Exactly.
And they've the same labour costs and energy costs as everybody else.
Yeah.
So they're really, it's an easy business to squeeze.
35% of costs are labour costs.
Mm.
It's huge.
Yeah. Yeah. City West, Valerie, owner paid 68 million. To house asylum seekers. What's interesting about this business is that so many of these hotel businesses have effectively changed their business model.
Absolutely.
And this company, Tetrarch Capital, which runs the 764-bed City West Hotel, is one of these companies.
Yeah, look, it's only one of them. I mean, this is actually a huge story. And I actually think it was an unnecessary thing to happen. The amount being spent on housing Ukrainian refugees and international protection applicants has gone down last year. Now, it went down from 2.13 billion to 1.84 billion. And there's a list of different people, different organisations, different companies who've got this money. Now, the City West owner was paid 68 million to house asylum seekers, which is an awful lot of money. It averages out 1.3 million on average per week. for accommodating them. But they're not the only ones. There's been loads and loads of smaller businesses taking them in. And one here, just looking at Rosemont Guest House in County Kerry. Now, that's owned by independent TD and Minister of State Michael Healy-Ray. And he got 24,280 for the final quarter last year. And it gives another of a lot of other examples like that, other hotels and so on. And, you know, the thing about these hotels is, though, I think this resulted from a panic situation with the government. I mean, we were taking in all the people we could take in. We were allowing people in. We were told by the EU we had to take so many. And then this thing came in about, you know, you have to look after people. You can't have them living on the streets. You're going to have to give them their own bathroom, their own front door, all of this kind of thing. And this is what has muddied the waters. Because, I mean, I've worked in a number of areas around the world where people are looking after refugees from other countries, from war and whatever. And they give them the basics they possibly can. But we had this thing in our heads. And, you know, it was fueled by people maybe with the best of intentions that we had to give them such a high standard.
Well, we didn't have the appropriate accommodation. Yes. So,
and why would we, Bobby?
You know, but this is what has happened. So we end up with all these hotels that were tourist business or...
Yeah. And we've damaged tourism as a result as well.
The net result, Robert, what are your thoughts on this, please?
Yeah, it's an incredible amount of money. It's close to nearly €2 for every €100 raised in tax has been spent on this. And again, it's more to do with the transfer of wealth. Like, I'm looking at some individuals here. One individual, former manager of Monaghan, Banty McEnany, his company received $50.4 million in 7 quarters. Now, I'm not saying there aren't costs associated with that, and that certainly isn't profit, but it shows you the amount of revenue and the amount of income being generated. And I think ultimately, as a country, we just have to get to something more sustainable. I believe, am I right, did the government not buy City West? Didn't they?
They
kind of had enough of paying, obviously, $7 million.
Yeah.
So I think you might see that as a trend, but whether that reduces the overall cost, probably not.
I don't know. No, and you know, like, I think for a lot of hoteliers, they looked at what they had.
Oh, God.
And they said, look, I can make more money with far less hassle on this model than I could in a hotel.
Totally.
And clearly, a lot of them have just gone in their droves to service that model.
Like Tifco Travelodge, they got $6.9 million for the fourth quarter. Like, that's on an annualised basis, that's $28 million.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the other thing is that not necessarily the ones mentioned here, not at all, but in some hotels around the country, the asylum seekers are being accommodated, sleeping on the floor. There's a ballroom in one hotel I know of, and there's 200 men sleeping on the floor.
Oh, dear.
And the owner is getting rich on that. I mean, I don't blame the owners. They probably want to make a few bob, but it's not good enough if we're looking at standards. And I do think there's still so many empty buildings around the country, monasteries, nuns' convents, barracks, where people could have been accommodated very simply. And you know why we turned them down? Because, oh no, there wouldn't be enough showers there and all this kind of nonsense. Yeah. You bring people in at the basic level, you get them off the streets, and then you work it up for the ones who are going to stay on.
Robert, I know you give financial advice. Yes. I don't know what you made of Conor Pope's piece. He'll be with us shortly talking about another matter. But nearly 50% of people have no savings. Yeah. It's an alarming stat.
It is, and it's getting worse. That's the most alarming piece about it. And it was from a survey done by the LIA, who are effectively the educational body for my profession. So it is, and the one of the key findings I saw, and obviously I've been in the industry now for 24 years, but the chronic issue amongst financial planning for women. So if you looked at the difference, there are 5% of women said they could put away something from the disposable income versus 24% of men. And then when you look at to pension coverage, so again, there's a huge difference there. There's a deficit in 31% of those aged between 35 and 54 not contributing to a private pension, rising to 42% of younger adults. But again, there's a gap there of 11% of women feeling very prepared versus 23% of men. So there's a gender gap. There is a demographic gap in terms of age. But yeah, no, and it is biting as the cost of living. That's basically it.
Very quickly, Valerie, tired of fighting with your partner while on holiday? We reveal never argue, how to never argue again. Tell us
Bobby,
more.
This is a load of rubbish, right? This is research. And they went out and they interviewed a number of counsellors as to how you could go on holidays and still stay married. 40% of travellers experienced daily disputes on holiday. 1 in 10 considered ending their relationship. How to argument-proof your holiday? Well, you know, this is way out of date. First of all, you know, sort out between you before you leave home. Did you cancel the milk? Who is going to feed the cat? I've never heard such rubbish in my life. And, you know, how you're meant to behave when you get out there. One thing they don't mention is it's okay to go your separate ways. I remember being on holiday once in Egypt with my husband, who's a keen golfer. He let a ball go into one of these green things. I was only driving the buggy, enjoying myself. And there was no sign of him coming out. And then the next thing he came out, pursued by a jackal, which had been in there in this thicket.
You heard it here, folks.
No, I mean, the one thing I would say, though, seriously, is these people should not be heading on holidays together. If they're behaving like this, they should be spending the money instead on a good divorce lawyer.
All right. Well said, Valerie Cox. Thanks to you and to Robert Whelan for a great review of the business stories.
Down to Business with Bobby Kerr.
Brought to you by Bank of Ireland.
Saturday morning at 11 on News Talk.